We have a question here from Dr. Curran.
Jim Curran from Emory University. I've spent my whole career at Human Health, and so I find this very illuminating session and a very important session for people from both a livestock perspective and a conservation perspective and a human health perspective to work together. But let me ask you a question. You know, when you don't know anything and people present parts of things to you, it gives you a lot of chances to ask questions. When I think about CWD, I think of three possibilities. One is that it is almost impossible to think of CWD as having any implications for human health, and we know that. Or it's possible that CWD could become the next mad cow disease, and then, therefore, the approach to it would be fairly aggressive, like it has been for mad cow disease, because, as we all know, when these groups work together, the human tail wags the dog. Or we don't know whether CWD could become the next cow disease, in which case the questions become, what is the likelihood of this happening, and how good are these diagnostic tests in picking asymptomatic carriers up? How long does it take for a test to become positive after transmission? If we thought there was a risk of this becoming an next mad cow disease, we wouldn't work in 26 states. We'd work in all 50 states immediately and test all animals that are captive everywhere, and we wouldn't tolerate this type of convergence of wildlife populations with captive populations with the idea that there could be some slippage in, and we'd work very hard to get good diagnostic tests that would be highly sensitive, sort of like the kinds of tests that are used to protect the American blood supply. So what do you think? Is there a risk that this is going to become the next mad cow disease?
I'm an ecologist, so I'm going to punt on that and give it to my colleagues.
I heard you were a veterinarian.
Well, I guess I'll try to answer that. The bottom line is you don't know. And if you look at people dealing with BSE in Great Britain, back 10 years ago, their assumption was that BSE wouldn't be moving to humans because they thought it was scrapie moving into cattle, and scrapie doesn't infect humans, and they were proven to be wrong. I think that to the best of our knowledge, the risk is very, very low. One factor in our favor is that I think the consumption of venison and sort of meat products derived from deer and elk is not similar to what we see with cattle, so the exposure will be less. I do have some concerns about some of the meat packing or meat processing procedures that are used for cervids. I don't know what it's like in the United States, but there's a lot of batching of meat to make sausages, and I know that CWD infected material is getting into the human food chain. So it's an experiment. I don't know what the outcome is going to be.
But the APHIS program right now is primarily one to deal with the economic consequences of livestock depletion rather than protecting human health.
I think that's correct. And I think the continuum you proposed earlier, I guess I would say it's somewhere between we think there's no chance to there's very little chance. And I think that's why we've measured our response the way we have.
That sets a priority for the research agenda.
Well, and when you look at it from the wildlife management perspective, you have a concern that if your second scenario were to occur, it's almost impossible, even if depopulation were to be the goal, it's almost impossible to depopulate wildlife populations. You know, they're free ranging. And there are no vaccines because you heard Trent talk about the immunity issue.
But they'll ask your recommendations for preventing this occurring in humans. So you'll have to have a different strategy if you can't depopulate.
Question up front. It's a race.
It seems to me from what you've said, the risk of humans getting this disease is low from the cervids, but since it can change by going through one other species, and somehow with that meatpacking industry issue, get into beef health or other beef food or other livestock food that humans also eat, isn't that really where the risk is? And we saw the thing of the hamsters don't get it directly, but indirectly.
I think the bottom line is it sort of complicates the issue of saying definitively that this disease can't move into new species because, or move into humans, because there can be modifications as you infect other species. It's hard to quantify that risk. It's just to paint the picture of the uncertainty behind statements of there absolutely is no risk for transmission to humans. That's the things you have to consider when you're looking at the bottom line.
Okay, there's a question in back and then over here.
So what do you tell hunters that have gone and hunted deer in a population where this is endemic? Do you advise them not to eat their venison? They're going to you as the experts. That's one question. And the real quick second question is, does the economic benefit of not testing every animal outweigh the possible economic consequences? This may apply more to BSE, and this is more directed to Mr. Shea. Does the economic benefit of not testing all animals at risk for BSE, what I mean by that is downer cattle, outweigh the economic consequences of having all sorts of nations ban American beef, and can that be applied to the CWE situation as well?
Just, I want to make sure I understood what you said. We do test all downer cattle for BSE.
Oh, as far as I was aware, I thought that there were about 150,000 downer cattle checked a year.
Every downer cow that makes it to a renderer or to a slaughter plant gets tested
okay.
for BSE.
Is that relatively new since the Washington?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's what I just wanted to know. And then what do you tell hunters?
We do get calls from hunters. Even though we are not a management agency, our field investigation team will get calls from hunters, usually from hunters' spouses. And they say, my husband just killed a deer and I have 100 pounds of venison in my freezer. Can I feed it to my children? And our usual response is, you might want to wait until the test results come back. If they're negative, feel free to eat it. If they're positive, you have to determine yourself what you think the risk is to your family. It's very difficult.
Lisa, over here. Angela, would you go? Yeah.
Maybe I'll just continue on with that while we're moving microphones. Is in some situations you have an animal that the meat is in the freezer, you can't test it. And so in that situation, I sort of advise people that you look at the area that it's come from. The prevalence is extremely low. You also look at the likelihood of meat containing the prions, and that, again, is extremely low. And then the possibility of it actually moving into humans is extremely low. And then it's not going to move from humans to humans. So the bottom line is that the risk is extremely low, and I'll try to allay any of the fears to hunters from that kind of scenario. It surprises me a little bit that you still have people that have known TSE or CWE infected deer, and they are not obligated to destroy it. They will, a lot of them turn it into sausage and they feed it to their grandkids. Well, not a lot, but a certain number are. And to me, that just doesn't make sense from what we know.
One issue with regard to this, just to continue one more explanation, is there's a website, cwd-info, which is a chronic wasting disease alliance. It's sort of a conglomeration of much information of value to the public on chronic wasting disease. And at that site, it, for instance, tells hunters and taxidermists how to properly dress a deer or an elk after a hunting event to avoid the lymphoid and neurologic tissues. So there are very specific things that you do not want to include in your meat products.
Dr. Mess.
It has been said that chronic wasting disease infected material, sausages, were getting into the human food chain. And my question is, do you know of any similar material getting into the bovine food chain or feed chain? And then the second question, which is related to the research agenda. I've seen a number of things, but I'm not so knowledgeable in CWD that I can pick it up. Have you been looking at how much infective material you could find in different tissues for elk or the different infected species? Because you know that this has been done for bovines in Europe and even bovines and other species to evaluate the risk and make suggestions on what kind of material should be removed from any feed or food chain. So research agenda and CWD infected material getting into the animal food chain.
I could address the research agenda generally. I think the very first thing we need is to have a diagnostic test that can be used in the field on a live animal. And I can tell you that, although I can't be more specific, I'm fairly sure there is a commercial company who is working on this exact product, and we've been asked to provide some samples from our CWD positive tissue bank for them to validate their tests. So, you know, I think that's a very important first step for surveillance, because right now only a tonsillar biopsy can, from a live animal, which is not easy in a deer or elk, can tell us whether the disease is there or not.
I believe the Food and Drug Administration feed ban should keep that material out of any bovine feed.
Question here. Wait one. Yes. Please. Sorry.
Well, maybe I have a loud voice, maybe I could begin. It actually is in follow-up to some of the questions that have just been asked. I think with bovine spongiform encephalopathy, there have been a number of studies to actually look at the presence of prions in different tissue. And obviously in the brain and nervous system, there's much more in muscle, much and very, very little to none. Have similar types of studies been done to look to see about the prevalence of prions in the different tissues? Maybe this was the same question being asked, but do you know if those same types of studies have been done with chronic wasting disease?
I'm not sure that those kind of studies have specifically been done. There's been work with oral exposure of mule deer fawns and looking at where the prions first show up and ileocecal lymph nodes and lymph nodes of the head, tonsil, and that. But as far as specifically examining certain tissues for the presence of CWD prions, I'm not sure that work has been done.
I'm not familiar.
We'll go to Dr. Curran first. And then...
I can't get enough of this topic. At least one of you, Dr. Bollinger, wouldn't eat a hunted deer that was known to be CWD positive. And that's always one thing I think about when I make public health recommendations of what would I do myself. It makes me wonder whether it is recommended for hunters to have deer tested, whether the tests are available, and whether CDC and others should, if this test becomes available, recommend them for testing before consumption, given that you wouldn't eat it if you knew.
Yeah, that's true. If I knew an animal had spongiform encephalopathy of any kind, I wouldn't eat it. I would if I didn't know the test results and it was and I had dressed out the animal myself, and I had taken nothing but skeletal muscle, given the current situation of the prevalence of the disease in Saskatchewan, I probably wouldn't be too concerned about eating it.
But if someone...
Sorry? As far as I know, it doesn't occur in Yellowstone yet, so I agree. They wouldn't let me hunt there either, I don't think so.
aren't there recommendations in Wisconsin, though? I mean, I think there are areas where it is endemic and where there have been recommendations to hunters.
Yes, and we provided testing capacity to hunters in Wisconsin last year and continue to do that.
Why one state? I mean, is it better than other states?
Wisconsin is a different situation because when this occurred in just about 24 months ago, the governor said to the state departments of agriculture and Department of Natural Resources, you will figure out what's going on here and you will do it now, and I'm giving you $12 million to do it. And so they did come together and have a collaborative effort that each fall, many of us in Wisconsin go and participate. I was going to wear my CWD volunteer hat today, but go and participate in the laboratory where the Wildlife Services biologists also joined this year. And the first year, there were 41,000 heads of white-tailed deer particularly examined, tissues extracted and tested. The second year, there were, about 18,000. So the number's going down, but surveillance remains the same. And what the surveillance is focused on is the what we call sparks, where the disease seems to jump out of the hot spot and form another little hot spot somewhere else. And so what Wisconsin has done is expand its area of surveillance through buffer areas over the 2.5 years since this disease began.
What are the hunter recommendations?
The hunters are strongly urged to bring the heads of their deer to the examination stations. So there are I think there are 18 field stations set up around the state to help the hunter remove the head, and then they take the deer home and give their name and address and phone number, and when the test results come back, the state informs them, particularly if it's positive, as soon as possible.
Tell them not to eat deer.
I'm sorry?
Tell them not to eat deer.
They tell them the same thing that I told that woman who called about her husband's deer meat. If it's positive, I think I would recommend myself, not speaking as a federal agency representative, that one not eat it if it were positive.
So as the epidemic spreads around the country, it's conceivable this will become a national program?
Perhaps, although it seems like the interest in Washington, D.C. is waning a bit, which concerns me a lot.
In at least some jurisdictions, the onus is now being placed on the hunter to pay for the testing of the of deer heads. So I guess if you're that concerned about it, you would pay the testing fees yourself.
Thank you. If I may, a comment. You said something about the origin of the BAC epidemic in Europe, and then from there to other parts of the world. And you said that it wasn't for sure, that the first hypothesis is that it's sheep scrapie that went into the bovine feed chain. But there are other hypotheses, and there is one which has not been, I think it's not yet been published, but it might be published soon, that says that it's a disease of wild ungulates, African wild ungulates, that were brought into zoos in the UK. And you remember a number of cases in zoos, especially in Great Kudus, that has been the index case or the source of, after rendering of the carcasses of those zoo animals. I'm not working for a federal agency, so I can... but an international organization, so I can say it, and it may not be to the like of everybody, but if I were you, I would be more worried about CWD in your ungulate population than by imports of from neighboring countries as far as BSE is concerned.
Dr. Redford in the back.
Thank you.
This will be our last question as well.
As Joel reminded us, it's elk are also red deer in Europe, and they're one of the species that has been most popular for Europeans to transplant around the world. So there are big populations in Argentina and New Zealand and elsewhere. Is there any effort to go look at the incidence of this disease in red deer elk populations in other parts of the world?
Nothing I'm aware of.
Nothing I'm aware of either. Is that an answer to the question? I'm afraid we're... I guess the answer is we're not aware of that. we've come to the end of our time. I want to thank our speakers for an excellent session.